complex implementations in the era of DT, digital transformation. We'll get through my point of view on it, what I see amongst the marketplace, what I see amongst enterprises and just businesses overall as they embark on this journey. A little bit about myself. Are they going to close the door? Irrespective if they close the door. My name's Darren Hubert. I am the CTO and chief architect of Microsoft Services, based in Singapore. So as you can probably tell from my voice, I'm from the US. I've been with Microsoft for 10 years, all in architecture delivery, so technical delivery in an architecture role. I've come to Singapore to be part of our time zone, our delivery, again, in a technical delivery role, overseeing a lot of our projects and working with our customers as they go on a technical journey. The topics for today, what I want to have a cathartic session on, the objectives and takeaways of this session. I really think I wanted to call this session like a lesson, like a, you know, it is a lessons learned session, but like sort of based on the mistakes that I've made or mistakes that I've had the opportunity to witness. And how that's really shaped my point of view on this, sort of I've learned mostly from mistakes, so you'll see a lot of those things weaved inside this presentation. But the objectives, I really want to talk about lessons learned. I've had the privilege of working on a lot of really transformational projects for a lot of enterprise customers that fortunately have had big teams, healthy budgets, and good goals and aims with desirable outcomes. So that's been a privilege to be part of these types of things. But things don't always go as planned, and that's what I want to cover today. So I want to talk about some lessons learned, some practices for these types of things. With that, I hope and I assume many of you are also in sort of a delivery role, or perhaps you're in a technical role or a business role where you're embarking on a digital transformation journey. And I want to cover with you perhaps some, let me cover this, project pitfalls. Sorry. There you go. Some project pitfalls and review what you can do to mitigate those common things. Hopefully, if you learn lessons, you probably tend not to repeat the mistakes of others. So hopefully, I'll share some of my mistakes and observations. And then bringing everything together, because it does take a village with these types of projects. From takeaway, these projects are extremely important, and even more so, they're becoming extremely important for businesses to get right. I assume your companies are on this journey as well. And that being the case, doing them correctly, making them successful, is really becoming to be a really big deal. I think from the size of this audience, I think that shows itself. The one thing I want to say is even if you fail, and failure is not necessarily a bad thing, it helps with your growth. It helps you learn. It helps a company learn what worked well, what didn't work well. I think that's a thing that helps with gray hair and experience. You learn through failure. At least I do. But they shouldn't discourage you from continuing these types of projects. They shouldn't discourage businesses from continuing to invest in technology, in these disruptive technologies. The point I want to make is that it's really important to get right, to do these things well. And I showed the slide earlier to one of my colleagues, and this is one point that he sort of jumped out of his seat a little bit on. For him, it was a very important point, is that creating what's called a responsive organization, being a responsive company, a company that is able to respond to these types of trends, to these types of changes, and create that type of culture within your organization and embrace these capabilities that are out there in the marketplace now. To enable DT success. So that's really the objectives and takeaways. I hope I get through that in this session. The thing I want to start off with is, what is the definition of it? What definition am I choosing to use for this label of digital transformation? I choose this quote. This one I think I got from Gartner, or maybe it was a McKinsey article. But just basically the point is the use of modern technology with an emphasis I would choose on radically improve performance, engagement, and the reach of business. That's the textbook definition. The bottom part is Microsoft's point of view, given that textbook definition. Microsoft, as an enterprise, we're not here to digitally transform our customers. We're in business to help provide the tools and the technologies and the capabilities to help our customers use them to digitally transform themselves. We view it as either a company digitally transforms their products. A perfect example of this, and it's a recent Microsoft case study, is Rolls-Royce and how they're using the Internet of Things to manage all of the telemetry that goes through any one of their jet engines. So these are the types of jet engines that would be on an Airbus or a Boeing 737 or 787, the types of big jet engines that get a lot of air miles, a lot of use, and the types of data that that provides helps pilots, helps businesses manage their when that thing may need to be repaired, because they often do, or how much fuel they need to carry, because fuel is a huge cost in that industry. So again, how you use it to transform your products. Optimizing operations. A wonderful case study that Microsoft has, and again, I work for Microsoft, so get that out there, is we work with a company called ThyssenKrupp Elevator, which helps leveraging telemetry, and it's also an IoT and Internet of Things solution that captures all the data off of the elevators in every building around the world, and then helps manage that to understand the service requirements and the SLAs for those elevators so that they can then sell their customers uptime, if you will, as a service. So they can guarantee the SLA of each elevator. And if you're in a big high rise in Manhattan or in Auckland or in Singapore, the elevator and the amount of use it gets is obviously very, very important. And it would be very disruptive to the tenants if it was constantly down, and the building people certainly wouldn't be able to get price premiums for the tenants in the building. Anyway, very important. As well as the ability to engage your customers and your employees. So that's really how Microsoft sees digital transformation. It's all of these technologies packaged up to deliver disruptive change. The big idea for the session, it wouldn't be one of my talks if I didn't have a slide that said the big idea. The big idea that I want to showcase, you guys can come on down. All good, all good. The big idea I want to showcase, we do have seats available on this side of the room. Come on in, all good. Is that digital transformation, this concept is not, I really want to emphasize, it's not hype. It is something that is really, I would argue, a foundational pillar for this next generation of technology, and we're calling it an industrial revolution. I'll explain what I mean by that term. The changes that are happening now with technology are really making a sea change in our economies, in our businesses, in our personal lives, and in the fabric of our societies. It's really that impactful. Uniquely, there are auto companies, just to prove my point, who will be soon releasing self-autonomous driving cars. 5 years ago, we knew that that was sort of a pet project over at Google, but it's now evolved to become what will be a ubiquitous and, I would argue, a well-received technology. Certainly, there are a few mishaps or things that they're getting over, but the early results are clearly very promising. So what we're having to see is we're blurring the physical and the technical divide. Another thing that I'd like to point out about this slide is that this is just the next industrial revolution, but you could see the cadence between the years, between the steam and the steam engine introduction and water mechanical production to the invention of electronics and electricity. That was, you know, roughly plus minus 90 years. The next one went to basically another 100 years, if you will, and that was electronics. So you can see they're probably in the 90-100 year range. But since then, we're at basically 47. I know because I was born in 69, so I know I know how long ago that was. But you can see that it's becoming faster and faster and faster, and I think things are going to be changing much more rapidly. Okay. The other thing with digital transformation, I'm trying to set the stage for this, is that it's now moving up to the boardroom. So this is a poll from PwC in their CEO survey where they're asking about CEOs what's important to them, what's important to them. And uniquely, technical advances or advances in technology and how businesses can best enable and leverage these rapid changes, these advances, becoming their number one priority. and it's what they feel will make or break their success more so than any other global trend, which I think speaks to the volume of people in this room. Thank you all very much for coming, as I said earlier. With that, from my side, again, working as a vendor and an architect in this industry, I find that more of my customers, more of my stakeholders, are the business decision makers within companies. Previously, it was largely, I'll admit, IT and CIO driven. Everything was funded, everything was managed through that. It's really become a transformational shift, so we're really now about 50-50, or I would argue more so going forward, it's gonna continue to skew, where the business decision makers will start having more and more of the budget to spend because they're on the hook for the actual outcome. And you can see sort of what the case in point is here. Okay. The drivers for it, what's driving this thing? Here are a few statistics. The thing that means it for me, the point of view that I come at, again, I'm an architect and I love to architect these types of solutions, but the two things are growth opportunities. So how can we create a new revenue stream? How can we leverage technology and all of these new advancements to create a new revenue opportunity? I spoke a little briefly about ThyssenKrupp Elevator and how they're able to sell elevator uptime as a service. That's a new revenue stream for them. They're guaranteeing and they're selling their customers a service, and that service is a brand new revenue stream for them. So as opposed to only servicing an elevator when it would break, they would be able to leverage predictive analytics and other types of technologies to be able to send technicians in advance and really help know when an elevator is going to break and be there preemptively to fix it. So a lot of those preemptive technologies. And I would argue that is a competitive advantage. The other thing is increased competitive pressure. So I feel that companies are also doing it to be, you know, me too. And that's a competitive ante. And that's sort of, I'm paying, whatever it is, $100,000 or other, just to play in this game. Because I know that I have to dabble into this digital transformation journey and find out what my competitors are doing. Perhaps they're doing it well. And if I don't do it, I'll certainly be lost and left behind. So that's really what I see. I assume there are, you know, dozens of other examples and other reasons as well. So those are all the beautiful things. Like it's a new trend, it's a new technology, CEOs, so you're getting the business behind it. Sounds great, sounds wonderful, let's go. But like any other technology project, now I would argue more so with these digital transformation projects, is that they have a high propensity of challenges. And that's because as opposed to installing or upgrading a SharePoint server farm or doing other types of IT-led projects, these projects are more ambiguous in nature. They will they're aiming to create new revenue streams, you know, try and do something new, or we're trying to leverage machine learning and other types of cloud services to do something new. So do we have enough data in order to create those types of models? Those are the things that are challenging. So the thing I want to point out is that if you don't do these, or if you do them poorly, a lot of these projects, even if well-funded, can go so poorly that they can threaten the very existence of an enterprise. I think that's an interesting point to note. But that said, companies and consumers, with the amount of information that's out there, are failing fast but are learning quickly. So I would say that the statistical trend of these projects is indeed going north, and we're seeing a lot more success in our outcomes. Okay, so that's really what I'm defining the situation as. Whoops, sorry. Here we go. So what I want to talk about in this talk, I want to cover what it means to be complex. I said this was in the era of managing complex implementations. What does complex mean? I'd argue it means different things to different people. Everyone has their definition. Planning for success. I think that's really pivotal to any type of project. I would say it's heightened with digital transformation efforts. Team alignment. How do you go about finding the resources? How do you build a team? And then ultimately putting it all together. And here we go. So defining complexity. I love this quote. When I saw this, this really, as I was preparing for this presentation, this was really a problem that I thought hit really well. And the point I wanted to make is that you can't solve a problem until you understand the problem you're solving. And I don't know all the time that businesses, when they go in and they embark on these things, it's communicated and cascaded through everyone on the team what it is the nature of the problem that they're solving. So I'm going to begin to throw down some ideas as to what defines complex, and these are some characteristics, if you will, of a complex project. Start with some business scenarios. So when you do these projects, oftentimes they're led through what is called design thinking or inclusive design type of thinking. I had the opportunity and the privilege to give a talk here at Ignite last year on what is design thinking. I hope many of you were there. I hope many of you walked away from that discussion and went down that journey. And if you did, you'd realize the ways in which you go about to decide whether or not a solution is viable, sustainable, desirable, feasible, and how you find that sweet spot. And that's a really unique thing, thinking out of the box. It's challenging to do that. How you know what decisions need to be made and when. Ultimately finding people who are accountable and accountable for making the right decisions. From a business perspective, very challenging. When you get into something like this where it can make or break how a company performs, very challenging. I think the higher profile a project goes, the more challenging, the more difficult it is to find someone who's accountable for those types of decisions. And from an architect perspective, one of the things that I find really challenging is requirements. What are we trying to do? Because everything ultimately boils down to a scenario, an outcome, and then requirements. And the requirements which come to me, for example, are loosely defined or overly rigid. It makes it very hard and very challenging to navigate through, especially if you're accountable to that outcome and you're accountable to an estimate or a budget to deliver that. And then, of course, if your teams are all over the world, if you're dealing with your teammates, your company may be multinational, like here, I work for Microsoft. If I have to work with people in Europe, for example, as well as the United States, the only time that I can do that is midnight till 2 a.m. in Singapore. So if you're out here in New Zealand, it's probably around 4 to 6 a.m. I assume some of you are in that bucket. Very challenging to do, as well as cascading those ideas and executing on them. From a technical perspective, the first use of the technology at a company always, always makes it super complex. If it's the first time you as a company are going to be dabbling in bots, first time you do it, it's always a challenge. If your first time you're doing something with machine learning, if you've never done it before and you don't have people who understand how to create these models and how to leverage them for driving a business outcome, very challenging. Even for a new technology, if you're going to go and move to the cloud and choose to embark on dynamic CRM online, very challenging if you've never done it before. And so I'd argue that's something to take away. With that, multi-party, multi-solution involvement. Sometimes companies are already wedded to a lot of different vendors and a lot of different technologies. Could be Salesforce, Google, Docs, AWS, and trying to build all of these things into one solution. If you have all of these vendors trying to get them to manage themselves to deliver a customer-focused / customer-obsessed outcome, extremely difficult. From a technical perspective, a lot of companies, as you go down this journey, realize that they want to include everything in it. So all of a sudden, you're dealing with a lot of sources of data. And how do you migrate that data? Because they want to be able to learn from it. They want to be able to act on it. They want to have the right insight and analytics. So everything comes into play, especially if it's a well-funded project. Everyone all of a sudden has a new data source that they want to have participate in. And now when you're dealing with all of these things, trying to normalize that, try to act on it, and have it be, you know, actually actionable and customer-focused is challenging. Same things with interfaces and integrations. So not only are you migrating your data, but you're having to complete a full cycle story and having that cascade down to other systems and have those systems interface with other systems and maybe even dispatch people because you've just received data that an elevator is broken to run on that example. Again, multi-source interfaces integrations just adds technical complexity. And then same thing of customizing versus leveraging out-of-box configurations. Everybody I know loves to customize because it provides that extra high degree of fit, but it just adds a lot of extra complexity and takes away from budget in a project that's budgeted, whereas if they just use the out-of-box capabilities, while it may not offer that initial 100% degree of fit initially, it gets you out of the door much more quickly and then allows you to leverage future services that a technology vendor like Microsoft may introduce that will help you age your story. It helps with upgrade path and the like. So these are just some technical characteristics. I assume everybody in the room has their own examples. These are just mine. And they fit on a slide. Other things that I want to talk about, things that I come across in challenges, is the wow factor, you know, the wow factor for the latest technologies. Quick example, I have the privilege of working with a company in Singapore that wants to make use of artificial intelligence. Their aim is to have customers interact with them in a way that's human-like. The scenario that I'm engaging with them for is more of a customer service scenario where the ultimate objective is to deliver an instant answer. Give them the first answer immediately the right time. And the technology that they say wow for is a lot of this bot technology that allows for chit-chat capabilities. And the idea that they're putting way more emphasis, in my architectural opinion, on that chit-chat element, and which doesn't necessarily help the whole idea of giving them an instant answer and helping them in that regard, saves down on a lot of operational costs. But again, they're choosing to go down this factor, and in my opinion, given their budgets and their time frames, they're just adding unnecessary complexity into this digital transformation. I love this picture of the blind leading the blind. Oftentimes, companies just, I feel, this is my opinion, force feed processes into their people, as opposed to bringing them on and helping manage that change. I don't know that change is something that's always budgeted for within and planned for within a project. So there's not really a vision for how we adopt a solution as much as I would like to see. And that's just the history of it. As far as rapidly evolving technologies, when I get involved in projects, a lot of the times the outcomes of these projects can take anywhere from 6 to 12 to 18 months. It's a long time for a project. When I get asked to estimate a project or architect a solution, I have to do it on today's knowledge. I can't architect necessarily for what might be available in 6 months or 12 months. Companies certainly are looking for confirmation on the outcome, so they're force feeding, if you will, or forcing me to manage the solution given today's constraints. Whereas if they weren't so rigid necessarily, we could have some ambiguity knowing that the cloud services and these technologies change so rapidly that maybe a service comes out that we can better leverage that creates a much more rich and a much more digestible solution. So that's something that I see. And then finally, engaging the right experts, engaging the right SMEs at the right time. At the end of the day, certainly there's a lot of new business change that has to go on. So engaging your thought leaders is certainly important, but it's also a team. It's a team of peers. So you have to have your technical experts be part of the solution as well. So sometimes finding the people who really know how to code great mobile solutions or how to really leverage, since I'm Microsoft, Azure, and all of the rich PaaS services that are available, sometimes very, very hard to do, especially as when the going gets tough, the tough need to get going, and that's where you really need SMEs with the right expertise to move forward. Okay, whoops, sorry. So let's start with the basics, things I just want to talk about. I know it seems basic, or when I showed this to my manager, he said he liked this slide because he said common sense isn't really all that common now, is it? and I think that was very poignant to me, is that a lot of companies I feel have trouble starting off creating their vision statements, creating their goal. Oftentimes where these types of solutions, especially in digital transformation, blend unique aspects of a business, as well as partnering with IT and likely partnering with multiple vendors to deliver a truly transformational solution. If there, the projects that I've seen that don't have a vision that everyone can at least adhere to, and that sort of is the North Star for us, those are the projects that only succeed if customers throw enough money at it. And those are the projects that would be a 18-month project, but turn into a 3 or 4 year project because of this one simple fact. I have a project in my history which did have a goal and vision. It was lucky for me. It was a drug company. Actually, it was a biotech company in the States that had a remit of advancing and creating medical devices and medical solutions that help save lives. So the digital transformation for this company was to have effectively a listening and an outreach program that helped manage drug safety and product complaints. And what that means for them is, in the current state, prior to embarking on this journey, getting enough information to determine if one of their products, one of their drugs, these injectable drugs that deal with a lot of blood diseases, deal with cancers, and very severe very severe health problems, was 24 months when they had enough of a sample to know whether or not one of their products was causing problems in the marketplace. After this solution, we dropped that down to between 6 and 9 months, and that, to the people of the company, was helping save lives. So that's really what a goal and vision statement actually does on the ground. Very, very, very important in my opinion. Another thing that makes or breaks, especially a digital transformation project, is having executive sponsorship. For me, executive sponsorship isn't having your VP of marketing or VP of sales or senior VP or EVP come in for the kickoff meeting, introduce the team, mention how important this project is, and then walk out and you never see that person again. Executive sponsorship is that person being involved and being there to make these really difficult, tough decisions, and having someone who's accountable for surfacing those up, because these things are always, always difficult. And this is where, again, it helps with showing commitment and as well as providing, you know, a governance model that's fit for that type of project. And my experience is, without it, projects will only be successful after they've failed and a company throws enough money at it. And that's why I wanted to include this in the slide. I really do think it's the glue that hides, that brings these projects together. That's my definition of complexity. I trust everyone else here has similar definitions, maybe a little bit different, but my show. Pardon? My show. You guys can get up on stage too. Planning for success. This is another a big one for me. Again, I'm going to emphasize it. All of my points here come from the point of view of a delivery architect. So I'm the one who's ultimately, when I get brought in, is accountable for the outcome. And sadly for me, I usually get brought in to help save the project, because it's between me and sometimes litigation. So I have that remit. One of my colleagues, Stephen Cohen, presented at this event last year saying the same thing. He usually comes in when the project's so bad it's between a failed project and lawyers, or he has to come in and take the reins in and make it successful. So everything starts off with planning. And if I get involved too late, it just makes changing the project that much more difficult. I love this quote from Churchill: failure to plan is planning to fail. And for those who are project managers in this room, you're going to understand that I'm not talking about project planning from a project management perspective. I'm talking about it from a team perspective. My point of view is that everybody is responsible for project planning. You may have one person who's accountable, but everybody is responsible. One of the things that I'm responsible for, I would argue I'm accountable for, is mitigating the desire of doing versus planning. Everybody goes through a project initiation. There's a kickoff. Everyone probably has a dinner along the way. But the next day, everybody, first thing, wants to open up Visual Studio, open up Azure, get into the portal, and start coding. I get it. But that doesn't help. That's, you're adding to complexity. You're adding to failure. Failure to manage expectations. Failure to manage your management's expectations for what's the proper duration of a project. And what is the proper outcome that they can get for the investments that they make. Oftentimes, it's behind a curtain. People who are funding these projects don't necessarily know what goes on behind the curtain. Therefore, they assume sometimes that people are not being working as diligently as they like. Same thing with requirements. If you don't have your SMEs focusing on the right requirements and developing the right prototypes early, certainly that just makes things a little bit more different. So when, as an architect, sometimes I've been involved in solutions where they've already chosen the technology before understanding the problem. And they've already been putting a plan for how they can leverage SharePoint for a particular solution when it wasn't the right technology to begin with. Again, that was a project that was maybe sold to the customer. That was the licensing deal that was crafted, but it wasn't the right solution. That's when I get involved. This, for me, is the money slide of the deck. Again, I'm an architect. Architects own estimation. We own the solution. We own the components, and we own the outcome. I'm the one who's responsible to say these are the right blend of technologies, either Microsoft or open source or third-party vendor, that when integrated will meet the requirements. They'll be supportable. They'll be upgradable. And they'll give you the return on investment that you're seeking. When I'm brought in, or when any architect is, and I assume everyone here is an architect, has had to do estimation, you never, ever, ever have enough information or analysis to do estimation. They always ask you, how much is this project going to cost? And usually I'm given a poorly worded requirements document, or maybe even a PowerPoint deck that is very marketecture that says, this is what we're going to do. These are all the things we're going to go. And I'm supposed to read this and provide a rough order of magnitude or a budgetary estimate oftentimes. And that number, unfortunately, no matter how much language you put on it saying this is a finger in the wind, this is just a guess based on the little data elements that you're sharing with me, unfortunately, that's the number that people latch onto. And they say Microsoft Architect said it would be 1.2. Therefore, that's the number that gets budgeted, and I have to deliver to it. So it's really can be challenging. In order to do that, then, what happens? I work with sellers, and sellers have quotas, and they have commitments to their management. So Darren, if you said it was 1.2, how come you're now saying it's 2.4? Things I have to deal with. And it's, again, as you learn more, and I try to explain this to them, but no one ever seems to understand, or they choose not to listen. I don't know. But estimates always have to get cut to make the price more attractive, to make it worthy of investment, especially with digital transformation projects. You never really know what the change is going to be, so it's very hard to necessarily estimate for it. Or you can do assumptions-based estimates where if you want this outcome, I'm assuming you have this many terabytes of data and telemetry around which I can use to build a neural network. That's an assumption. Do they ever get document them? Do they ever get read? Probably not. Unfortunately, that's my experience. The other thing is, and I was told to go ahead and say this. No, I don't mean to offend anyone, but when you're doing estimates, you can't estimate for the stupid. And unbelievable, half the times, estimates are probably sound, but the amount of stupidity that sometimes enters the conversation takes what could have been, and I'll just throw out, 100 hours worth of soup to complete a story. But because someone has a lofty idea or they just don't understand the process and they hold down the conversation, it doesn't go as fast as it could. And now that 100 hours becomes 200 hours, sometimes it becomes 400 hours. And it's not right. So you can't estimate for stupid. The doers, the people who do these things, unfortunately, are always excluded from sizing up estimates. And it's just a problem. I don't know how to fix it. Sometimes I pull the audience, I pull my friends, but you never have enough information to begin with. And then what happens oftentimes is you rush to hit a deadline, and that always leads to quality issues. So I feel very poorly for anyone here as a software tester or a solution tester. And this also works for your traditional IT projects, but I would argue it's amplified, it is heightened. It's hot sauce on the stuff when you get to the digital transformation stuff. You can't have poor quality, because if it's digital transformation, you're really opening up the door to impacting your customer experience, huge no-no. Your operations, equally big no-no. Your products, I don't know which one's most important. They're all equal, I would think. So that's why getting all of this right, and it all begins with estimation. Everyone wants to know how much it's going to cost. Very, very, very important. For me, the money slide. The next thing is people, I feel, don't know that change is inevitable. Change management, change of requirements, as you peel that onion, it invokes change. What does that requirement mean exactly? If I have to integrate with you have an ERP system, that's nice. I have to integrate it, that's nice. How many elements of data? How many tables? Well, all of a sudden it becomes multiple tables, bidirectional, sometimes batch, some near real time, and all of a sudden to meet the specific workflow, the specific outcome, all of a sudden all of these requirements, which were never assumed or documented, have to be handled. So my emphasis is how people can best handle change. And it's not just project change or change in requirements, if you will, which is inevitable, but actually handling change management and the change of the solution and how it impacts the organization from a people and your employee perspective or your operations perspective. Because ultimately, people need to be able to sustain and manage this these types of solutions. So very important. For me, that's planning for success. If you handle all those things, the percentage of success goes up significantly. I would make an American political joke, but I'll refrain.
Please.
Not in the States, go for it. I'll weave one in the conversation. So, first of all, I just want to say I apologize for you guys. I'm sorry. It's not the conversation I would expect from my homeland, so I apologize for it. Sadly, it makes entertainment. This is a huge slide for me. When you go on these types of projects, and I've had the unique privilege on being on a lot of these projects that have big impact, big transformation. Again, fortunate I work for Microsoft, and we're invited to these types of conversations. But at the end of the day, you've got a team of people who are the ones who are going to be carrying the workload. Not everybody is equal. Some guys are your rock stars. Some guys are the people, when the going gets tough, these are the guys who are working 16 hours a day, day after day after day, week after week after week. And unfortunately, they bill 8 hours a day. That happens. But you have to care for them, because these are the guys who get the project over the goal line. But you have to manage, as an architect, I choose to, how I manage and how I identify these people and how I onboard them into the project is a huge part of my my job, my responsibility. Moreover, I have a responsibility to my customers and their budget. So I have to be very, very precise as to when I onboard someone with a very unique and very difficult skill that's not really in the market. And a lot of these DT solutions require those types of skills. So challenging, it's very challenging predicting when it's going to be and when you need those resources and then onboarding them. You can't just take the first person who has a resume that has a that has machine learning in it. You have to find the right person, either from a cultural fit or really from a technology fit. My favorite thing I'd say is, along with these technical and functional skills, people just have a creative mindset who can understand the actual requirement. I never claim to understand everything. I never claim to have the most wow ideas, but people who help challenge your thinking, who are willing to debate the merits of these things and come up with perhaps a better solution, those are amazing skills to have. People who just take orders and go code and just survive on pizza and Coke, cola. That's those aren't necessarily the best team people to have on the team. Again, I would say you have to avoid selecting the first person. You have to choose the best person, and the more important the project, the greater the need. Very, very, very important. It's a people business at the end of the day. I spoke a little bit about this earlier with regards to stakeholders, and I said the VP who comes in, and this is a true statement. This happened to me plenty. They come in, they tell me how important this is, and I should reach out to them anytime I ever have a question, and I never see them again. They never reply to my emails. That happens. But the thing that any project, at the end of the day, someone needs to be the adult in the room. Someone needs to be that decision maker. Someone needs to really understand the word accountable. And for me, that's uniquely a little bit challenging. Obviously, the more challenging and more important the decision is, whether or not you're going to go into a new market, how you're going to attack the new market, are your customers going to want this type of solution if you're engaging them? Do they need that type of app on their multiple devices, and if so, how do they want to engage with you as a business? You know, those types of things. You need someone to be able to make that decision. When you engage other people, vendors, oftentimes they're not the industry experts and they don't have that skill set, but you need someone who's there who can say, this is how it works in this industry, this is how it works in this type of high-tech manufacturing. You need to have those people on board. The thing I would also say is first option adoption is a killer. For those people who go with the first solution or go with the first technology and choose to leverage that without exploring the world of options. Again, I spoke earlier about a solution. This is with a government entity where they were sold SharePoint and they would extend it through customdev.net and leveraging cloud services. But it's just the wrong platform. And there was nobody accountable for it. So unfortunately, we keep spinning wheels on that issue, and it just creates more complexity, more problems. And that goes the same thing with analysis paralysis. I know everyone here has probably dealt with this in one form or another, where you have all of these options. They all look great, perhaps. They're all good, but you have to pick one. Who's going to pick it? And sometimes if it's decision by committee, those decisions just get pushed down the line and then pushed down the line, and all of a sudden it's 2 months later and no one made the actual decision, and you're just adding more challenge to making that the right solution. That's why sometimes these projects that could be done in 12 months sometimes go out to 24, 36 months sometimes. Okay. Architecture and design. This is my problem to own. As an architect, I just want to be able to provide a solution that meets the advancing requirements of the business, where the business is going, and allow the businesses the flexibility to be able to adhere to core architecture foundational principles and be able to have it manage the business, have it do so in a supportable, upgradable, dependable way where they can extend it properly and all of those things. Especially as you get into these types of challenging projects, if those core foundational pillars are not in place, it makes dealing with it very, very difficult. So as a designer, one of the problems I have also is when a customer chooses to have different environments for different topologies for different environments. What I mean by that language is they'll have a production environment that may have 18 servers that supports it, from everything from identity through servers in a DMZ through your, obviously your front end, your back end servers, your failover and recovery servers, all of those things. But yet the testing environment just has one server in the front end, one server in the back end, and maybe one server in a DMZ. And that's not a like for like. And it's extremely difficult to prepare and design a solution that is performant and that will meet all of these requirements unless you have all of these environments in tow. And that's something that I'd love to get out there. I rarely see, when I see companies cut corners and take a less expensive path, environments always seems to be one that comes back to bite. And especially if you want to have a performant solution, very, very, very difficult if that's not all taken into account. Putting it all together. These are all lessons learned from projects that I've been involved with. I work with a lot of folks within my quote-unquote architecture community, and I pull them for their ideas. There's a lot of groups that I belong to where I want to make sure that I get their ideas and what they see in the marketplace. And everyone knows, and the idea is that delivering these types of projects is difficult, but achievable. It's definitely much more difficult than your smaller engagements, and you shouldn't treat them as such. With that said, there is absolutely a lot of different people, a lot of different disciplines that are required to execute these things. I would say the biggest difference, if you remember the beginning of my presentation, the slides, is that it starts with the business. All these things are largely business funded, and you need those types of sponsors, those types of champions, which is very much different from a traditional IT project, to be sort of bland about it. You need that those stakeholders. You also need to deliver true transformation. These people who I would call digitally literate, people who understand how to embrace technology, using its multiple form factors, leverage the cloud for its solutions, leverage on-prem solutions as well and existing investments, understand users, understand consumers, understand these design patterns. Having all of these people be part of your team, it takes a really, really strong multidisciplinary team to team together and gel to deliver these types of solutions. One of the things I would also add is the transition from delivery through to operations. And those companies that really include operations in the early and the onset of understanding what it is about their business or their customer base that they're choosing to transform, bringing those people on is an amazing lesson learned. Bringing them on early, having them understand the solution, having them understand the outcomes and the requirements and the decisions for those requirements allows them to support it. It also helps with a proper DevOps model, because once you get into a production environment, you can really go and be a lot more agile and be able to code release support much, much more quickly. Okay? So I would say individuals brought together doesn't make a team, but together a team is what delivers true success. Okay? Leading practices and observations. For me, defining the program plan, short-term and long-term, I'm the kind of guy, I really appreciate customers who are willing to go in incremental projects to define. Phase one might be to define what it is that we're going to do. We're not going to open up code necessarily. We're not going to deploy prototypes early. We might whiteboard stuff. We might take a lot of pictures. We might walk on site with our customers and understand what it is that they do and what makes them happy about gauging our business, what makes it challenging for them to do, and really understand the life of a customer. Those are the types of things. And then doing those short incremental approaches, being able to prototype early and do it often. Does a customer like this? Yes, no, doesn't work. Does a customer like this? Yes, okay, great, let's keep it. And just do the minimal viable product. Gold plating is, I understand people love to do it. I'll be candid, I used to love to do it. I always used to want anything that had my name associated with it be of A++ quality, but sometimes the quality bar doesn't need to be that high. Sometimes getting a viable product that proves the point and does it quickly is much more than ample. So that's something I'd love to get out there. Choosing the right approach. Just because a customer may want to get software out quickly because it's important for a competitive advantage or a competitive anti-reason, if they want to do so, agile doesn't necessarily mean it's the right approach. If a customer, just because they're in a government or maybe a heavily compliant industry, pharmaceuticals, banking, because of that, they may choose to have a gate and checkpoint solution, so a waterfall approach. It's not a four-letter word. But those things are okay as long as you don't introduce too many features. Too many times, and I understand it, but boy, is it tough, is when customers want to boil the ocean. Every requirement. As soon as these projects get funded, it's amazing how many people want to join and get involved. So if you're part of a company here that's thinking of embarking on these solutions, and you get the right stakeholders, you get all the right sponsors, you bring the business decision makers together, you bring the technical decision makers together, and all of a sudden it gets funded, I guarantee you everybody in business and everyone in IT, they all want to be associated to that project. And they all have their own interests, they all have their own agendas, and aligning those things is complex. So this is when the stakeholder and the executive sponsor, the adult in the room, the person who can hold accountability, that word becomes increasingly vital, okay? These are all lessons learned. Nothing new necessarily, but common sense, again, isn't all that common. And again, from my perspective, making every effort to configure before customize, it's sort of a core principle at Microsoft is to leverage the out-of-box capabilities and features. Uniquely, I find that people don't even know what the solutions that they buy are these platforms. We're a platform company. I guarantee you half the time the people who implement these platforms don't know everything that the platform can do. They maybe have a 100, 200 level understanding of it, but if you're going to be implementing things like SharePoint Online, Dynamics CRM, all of the PaaS solutions in Azure, they are so rich. But understanding how to do it through either the user interface or through declarative configuration, those are the things that really help the viability and the long-term sustainability of any project. And then lastly, understanding how to measure these things. How do we know when a project's successful? What are the right KPIs? One of the things about objectives and how to measure them, and I wanted to talk about this point earlier when on the planning section, is sometimes I've been part of projects where I've been 90% done with something. So when they say, how far along are you with building this use case? 90% done. But the remaining 10% just happens to take 90% of the time. How do you manage that? How do you observe and report that? Really challenging stuff. So it really takes, a well-educated consumer is my best customer, that kind of thing. So how you understand your objectives and how you measure them will determine your success or your failure on these types of projects, okay? Getting over the line. This is what I wanted to take away is I hope everyone understands this is a little bit of a cathartic session for me. Again, I start off saying that this was sort of group therapy. But these projects are all really attainable. They can be done in the original budgeted time. They can be done, but it takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of patience, it takes a lot of trust and understanding. And when all of these things align and the stars align, and sometimes they do, it's a work of art, it's a thing of beauty, and these are the things that define people's careers. These projects, I will talk to you at length for hours, ad nauseum. You probably will hate me at the end of the conversation about some of these projects that I've worked on. That's when my passion goes up. I'm like, oh, this is where we did a project where we helped a company streamline X amount of dollars out of their partner management system and the amount of return on investment, blah, 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 blah. I can go on for those things about for hours. But those are the things that help get a solution over the line. So I'd say it is very achievable. But the best managed projects, top down, bottoms up, team effort, are the ones who are innovating and the ones who are thriving in this industry. And if you remember the slide where I talked about the rapid pace of change in this Industrial Revolution 4.0, it's becoming faster and faster. And if you want to be competitive with your peers, or if you want to leapfrog your competition, you have to really be, and the tools are available out there. All the Lego is there. You just have to know how to build it. And that's where these ideas come into play. One thing I just want to say, it is achievable. Old ways of thinking, while helpful, can certainly be dangerous. Always, always answer the question, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? What is the why behind the what? Really important. As an architect, my point of view is that architecture and how these things work is the foundational pillar. It is the epicenter. It is the sun of this solar system. It is the thing that will enable digital transformation. I think I'm right on that one. These projects, if you remember, there was a slide on one of the slides that said 17% of these projects can fail so badly that it'll impact the viability of an enterprise. So just all I'm going to say to that is these things are, if you do true digital transformation, they are very difficult, but they're mission critical, which adds to the passion. This is why people really want to do these things. These are the types of projects that are going to really are career defining projects. Okay. As far as planning, adhere to the plan, but always be adaptable. Things always change. And my favorite thing to say is there's never a project where you embark on and then all of a sudden the project's done. We're digitally transformed. It's not. It's a mindset as much as it is of anything. It's a journey. You will always, always change. As you embark on these types of programs, it's not a project. Project could be part of a bigger program, but how you transform your products, how you engage your customers, all of these things, leveraging cloud computing, leveraging artificial intelligence, leveraging language understanding, bot framework, all of these things, they're today's technologies. There will be tomorrow's technologies, and tomorrow's the day after's technologies. The amount of services, I assume it's been presented or it will be presented, the amount of services that are being released by the Microsoft product groups is at such a rapid scale right now. It's amazing, and the more platform, the more PaaS applications that are available help create an even richer experience. So be adaptable to change, okay? And then all of these things could be absolutely, and I get it, completely overwhelming. Do I go with a platform out of 365? Do I go with these services in Azure? Which one's the right one? Do I go with lifting and shifting an existing solution into the cloud and put it on an Azure VM? Or do I start from scratch? And if you keep going down these things, and everyone inevitably comes across analysis paralysis. The thing that I would say with these things is start fast, fail quickly, but start in small. Don't ever be afraid. Don't ever be afraid. And a lot of people sometimes are. And there you go. Parting thoughts. My parting thoughts for you on your digital journey. First of all, I want to thank you all very, very much for your time. I really appreciate you giving me an hour of your day. I really do value the opportunity to share some thoughts with you. I hope this was a good use of your hour. It's important to me that it is. But as far as parting thoughts, everyone's about three. What are the three things to take away? I know a lot of people say they can only deliver three things, Darren. Those are the things that people want to know. I can only remember three things. I've heard the number three, it's a magical number. Single accountability for me is huge. And that goes into every aspect of a project and of a program. If you have that single accountability, the odds of managing your complex implementation increase significantly. The other thing that I would say is expertise. Taking a class and understanding how a cloud service works is not deep expertise. When I say expertise, when I was doing a solution in the pharmaceutical industry, having people who understood drug safety, it's an incredibly deep discipline, actually. People who understood how you manage, because it's about the life and death of people, apparently, and it is. having that expert as part of your project team was invaluable, because that way you can understand how to design a solution and architect a solution that can allow people to make these types of decisions that have that type of impact. So that deep domain expertise, absolutely critical. If you have it, again, your chances of success increase significantly. Moreover, having the right approach, having the right mindset. I don't know if your approach or mindset has to be agile or scrum. You have to be a pretty understanding organization, a responsive organization, to really make use of those types of approaches. But having the right approach for your culture, for your company, choose once, choose wisely, stick to the plan. Hugely, hugely important. Leverage your IP. Leverage the thing that made your company successful to begin with. Why customers buy from you to begin with. Always leverage those things, those foundational pillars. Don't try to transform and become somebody else that you're not. That's not necessarily, I guess there are examples of it being successful, but I think the graveyard of examples is a little bit more full. And then finally, knowledge transfer. The thing with these things is you always have to cascade your knowledge to the next person who has to develop the system, who has to operate the system, who has to upgrade, who has to support. And those who share everything never have to share anything. And that's a great quote from one of my friends. If you share everything, you don't have to share anything. Knowledge transfer is a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, I do sometimes see people hoard it, because that's what gives them capital. So those are the things that I would say to minimize risk and to deliver excellence. Again, all of these things are really fun, amazingly fun, if you get the right team, the right stakeholders, the right business outcomes, the right types of digital thinkers. You'll align all of these things, and you can really have a tremendous impact on your organization and, more importantly, on your customers. So with that said, I'm actually on time, and I want to say thank you so much for your hour. I hope that was helpful. Thank you.